welcome back to our next edition of What's the Fact? Okay, today is our fourth program. Okay, we're very excited about that. And let me welcome, in the first place, our crew for today, our four teachers, okay, who very kindly came here with us today, okay? Today we have got Anna.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, Anna from Manchester. How I like Manchester, by the way. Okay, Christina from the world.
good morning, Cuenca. Welcome again.
Okay, it's really good to see you again, Christina. And again, we have got Mariluz. Okay. Hello, Mariluz. How are you?
Hello, how are you today?
Okay, and of course, I cannot forget our technician, radio technician, radio specialist, and many other things, Agustin. Okay, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, and here speaking to you is Manu García. Okay, as I said, I'm very excited to be back here. Right, so what different ways can you listen to us, by the way? Basically you can listen to us on www.radiocolor.es. Okay, and also on by the traditional means, which is the radio, on 106.2 FM. Okay, and of course you can look for us on Facebook, okay, on our Facebook webpage. Okay, now let me tell you some content for today, for this fourth edition of What's a Fact. Now, we're going to see some grammar mistakes, okay, just a couple of them, because I would like to introduce as well our false friends, okay? You know that false friends are very important too. I will explain what that is in case you don't know. After that, you have the musical break, okay, with an idiom, as we normally do. And finally, we will have the fact, okay? Christina, what is the fact for today? Because I think it's quite interesting as well.
Yes, it is. Today we're going to talk about the Common European Framework of Reference, okay? And just a little hint, because we'll talk about this later, but many people are always asking, what's this about a B1, a B2, uh-huh. an A1? So I think people get a little bit of mixture. So we're going to talk about the Common European Frame of Reference today, okay?
Okay, I'm looking forward to listening to the explanation and seeing the different levels. Thank you. And so now let's get started, okay? And now Anna, okay, is going to correct some homework that she gave us last week. If you remember, Anna read an extract from a book, The Count of Monte Cristo, and she gave us some questions for you to reply. And the questions have been on the website. So Anna, would you like to reveal the answers now, please?
Yes, of course. Okay, so the first question was, on February 24th, 1815, Napoleon did something. So the answer to this question was number 3. So on February 24th, 1815, the Pharaon arrived in Marseille. And the second question was, Dantes took a letter to Napoleon on Elba because, and the answer was number 1, because he had to follow Captain Leclerc's orders. And then the final question was, Monsieur Morel wants Edmund to do something. And the answer to this question was number 1, to be the next captain of the Pharaon.
Okay. That's good, Anna. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I hope our listeners got many of the answers right. Okay.
I think I have passed the exam.
and obviously, we hope you did your homework. Not be prepared to do the next one.
Okay. Of course. So now let's continue. Okay. And as I said before, I am going to comment on some common mistakes as we usually do. Okay. Today. Very simple ones, but people sometimes get these things mistaken, okay? So, for example, everybody knows the word lunch or the word dinner or even the word breakfast, okay? You know them as nouns, but some people think they can also be verbs, but they're not verbs, okay? So we say my lunch was fish today, or I had fish for lunch. However, some people say, today I lunched fish, or I went to this restaurant to dinner meat. Okay, no, that is not correct. We say, I went to this restaurant to have dinner, or to have fish for dinner. Okay, or this morning I had orange juice for breakfast. Okay, so breakfast, lunch, and dinner are nouns, but never verbs. Okay,
good. So we always use them with the verb to have.
Exactly. Okay, I had a very nice breakfast, I had orange juice for breakfast, etc. Fine. Another mistake that I would like to comment on is irregular plurals, okay? I think we have seen a little bit of irregular plurals already, but this one we haven't seen yet. Woman and man. Fine. What is the plural of woman, Mariluz?
Women.
Okay, and that's the correct pronunciation as well. Woman, women. Okay, but some people say woman's by mistake, because normally we tend to add an S for the plurals, but not in this case. It's an irregular plural. So it's one woman, two...
women.
Thank you very much. Anna, mm-hmm. It's the plural of man.
Men.
Okay. But we don't say men's or man's, right? Some people do it by mistake, but it's not right. Something that I tell my students sometimes when they cannot make the difference between man and men is to think of superheroes, okay? Many people like superheroes.
Me too.
I say, you know, what is it? Spider-Man or Spider-Men? It's obviously...
Spider-Man.
Thank you, because there's only one. How many X-Men are there? One or many?
Many.
So it's plural. So one Spider-Man, singular, X-Men, because there are many of them. Okay.
That's a very good example.
Yeah. And actually, my students tend to like that. because they like the example, and they can
understand it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's easy to see. Okay, so for those listeners who are teachers of English or something like that, you can follow that example, and... it has a, you know, it works out for me. Okay.
Good example by Manu.
Okay. And as I said before, we're going to see some false friends now. Okay. False friends. Can anyone explain what a false friend is, just in case somebody doesn't know?
Okay. It's a false friend is something that it's basically for natives, for Spanish speakers, because they are words that sound, that we think they mean something, but they mean something completely different, because we use our imagination and we practically invent, or we try to translate literally mm-hmm. the word, but there are many words which mean completely a different thing, and sometimes you can find some sort of embarrassing situations
yes.
because you're saying the wrong thing.
Absolutely. That was a good explanation, Christina. So we think it's one thing, but they're actually another thing, just like a false friend in real life. Fine, so let's start by a very simple one, okay? So, avocado, okay? What is an avocado? Sounds a bit like abogado in Spanish, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with that, okay? Mariluz, what is an avocado?
It's an aguacate. It's something that you use to make guacamole.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so if you want to use it, you can say, I'm going to prepare guacamole and I need some avocados. That is not, I need some abogados to do a guacamole.
It could be a very, you know, in a very weird situation if you said that. Like, I need a lawyer, okay, to prepare my guacamole. Okay, so avocado, aguacate. Okay, very good. And now let's get into another false friend. This one is double. It works in both directions. These are assist and attend. Okay, assist sounds like asistir, but it doesn't mean asistir. What does assist mean?
It's aid.
Sorry?
To help someone.
Yeah, assist means help. Okay. For example, we use assist when you are driving in the middle of the road and your car breaks down, okay, and you call the road assistance, okay? The road assistance is like the road help service, okay? So assist means help, ayudar, auxiliar, we could say in Spanish, okay? And then, if assist doesn't mean asistir, what is asistir in English, Christina?
You can have the verb or you can have the noun. The verb is to attend, okay? And it would be attendance.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that would be asistencia.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So attend means asistir. For example, you can attend a class or you can attend a lecture. You can attend, I don't know.
You can have, for example, I've got a good example. And this is a very good... This is a very good example for teachers. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, when we have, for example, in the academy, every time we start a class, we do not have an assistance sheet, una lista de asistencia. No. What we have is an attendance sheet where we tick the students that have attended class,
not
the students that have assisted class.
Exactly.
Because they do need help, but really they attend.
Yes. So very good. That was a very good example. Okay, very good. I think you understand it. And now let's continue. Okay,
it's part three.
Yep. Let's start part three of the program. So
today we're going with the idiom. Yes.
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 Yep.
I think what's our idiom today?
So today's idiom is you have to be cruel to be kind. So maybe we can hear this in the next song. So this is a song by Nick Lowe, and it's called Cruel to Be Kind.
Okay, so let's listen to the song, and after that we will explain how to use it and its origins, and it could be a nice.
Okay, off we go.
Let's go.
All right. So I hope you liked the song, okay? And I hope you the idiom that's going to be explained by Anna, okay? So Anna, please tell us about this this new idiom for today.
Okay. So the idiom "you have to be cruel to be kind" is to do with maybe saying something or to somebody which might hurt them or offend them, but you're doing it for the greater good. So you're doing it to be kind, but you have to be cruel. Okay, so in the song, the man is singing about how a woman treats him badly, and she explains that she's being mean because she loves him. So maybe she's done something or said something which is cruel, but the reason behind this is that she's doing it because it's for the greater good. Okay, so maybe we can think of some examples of how you would use this. Uh-huh. So I can give one first. So for example, one could be, "We really need to talk to Christina about her work clothes. She thinks they're okay, but the bosses are saying she looks unprofessional and that they might need to fire her. So I guess we've got to be cruel to be kind and tell her that her clothes actually are pretty terrible."
I hope that's not true.
No, no. Okay, so you can see how it would be used.
Uh-huh.
So maybe we can give a bit of history behind this expression.
That'd be good.
Yeah. So actually the first time that it was used was in one of Shakespeare's plays, so Hamlet. And in this play, Hamlet says, "I must be cruel only to be kind." But now this has changed a bit, and we would say, "You have to be cruel to be kind."
Uh-huh.
Okay, so for homework for this week, maybe it will be posted on the Facebook page. So this will be like a gap-filling exercise. So the lyrics will be posted online, and you guys can try and fill them in, okay?
Yes, it's good to be now. Typical listening exercise.
And actually, I think the reason why we're posting more and more homework, mm-hmm. you know, it's because we have to be cruel. Okay,
it's going to be good for you.
Okay, thank you very much, Anna.
It's okay.
That was lovely. Fine. So now we're getting into the fact. Okay, for today.
And what's the fact, Manu?
The fact today is the common European framework of reference, okay, for languages, right? And Christina already introduced a little bit of that, okay, at the beginning of the program. But Christina, perhaps we would like to hear more about it, okay? What is a common European framework of reference?
Okay, well, we'll later go on to find out, because it's a measurement of how to level the different levels of English. And the common European frame of references for languages, learning, teaching, assessment, was created by the Council of Europe to provide a common basis for the elaboration of language syllabuses, curriculum guidelines, examinations, textbooks, across Europe. It was envisaged primarily as a planning tool whose aim was to promote fluency and coherence in language education. Okay, but let's explain a little bit more about this. The Common European Framework provides a common, and this is very important, a common basis for the elaboration of language, as I said, syllabuses, curriculums, etc. It describes in a comprehensive way what language learners have to learn to do in order to use a language for communication and what knowledge and skills they have to develop so as to be able to act effectively. The Common European Frame is intended to overcome the barriers to communication among professionals working in the field of modern languages, erasing from the different educational systems that obviously we have in Europe. It provides the means for educational administrators, course designers, teachers, teacher trainers, examining bodies, etc., to reflect on the current practice, with a view to situating and coordinating their efforts and to ensuring that they meet the real needs of the learners for whom they are responsible. Obviously, you can imagine this has been a huge job. This cannot be done just like this.
A couple of hours,
yeah. Without a shadow of doubt.
It has taken a lot of time, okay? It really started around the 1970s, and we are in year 2017, wow. And it's actually approved in the 2000s. I think exactly it was in the something somewhere around 2001 or something like that. Yes, mm-hmm. That's when the final agreement. But it really all started in the 1960s. With many different people, started with the Council of Europe of Modern Languages, with projects in the 1960s and following into the 90s, wow. With an international symposium in a very strange place called Rushkilkan. Okay, mm-hmm. Then there was a publication of the threshold level, which is basically towards the B1 level of the Common European Frame of Reference. There was also some French publication and some German publications. Then during the 1980s, the communicative approach became established, okay? And then when it really got going was in the 1990s, okay? When there was an intergovernment symposium. So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of governments involved in this. And finally, in 2001, the final draft was published simultaneously in English and French by the Council of Europe. In 2000, the language portfolio was also launched. And look at this. It was translated into 37 languages.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of work and a lot of people involved. There was also a toolkit developed, including manuals, reference supplements, content analysis grids, and illustrative samples of writing and speaking. This is when the Council of Europe encourages the development of reference level description for specific languages. Okay, so this is a little bit of the story, but for what uses is this Common European Framework?
Because today
Yeah, is it intended to? Well, it includes many things, okay? It includes the planning of language learning programs in terms of assumptions regarding to the prior learning or knowledge that they have, the objectives, the content. It's also intended for the planning of language certification, because we need to certify the languages.
That's so important.
Yes, and we will go more in depth into this, because this is what really interests our audience, okay? For the context of syllabus of examinations, and of course, the assessment criteria in terms, and this is very important, more of positive achievement rather than negative mm-hmm. deficiencies.
Just what rather than what the student can't do.
That's exactly. Also, the planning of self-directed learning, including raising the learner's awareness, self-setting of feasible and worthwhile objectives, etc. Okay? And the learning programs and certifications can be global, bringing a learner forward in all dimensions of language proficiency and communicative competence. Could be modular, improving the learner's proficiency in a restricted area for a particular purpose. It can be weighted, emphasizing learning in certain directions and producing a profile in which a higher level is attained in some areas of knowledge and skill than others. and it could also be partial, taking responsibility only for certain activities and skill, okay, and leaving others aside. Okay, so after all this, we'll really get into what people really want to know, okay? How many levels, what's all this about A1s, B2s, C1s, which are the different levels that the Common European Frame of Reference has? And I think Manu is just going to give us a brief outlook of what this is. Okay, Manu?
Certainly. Okay, so there are six levels, okay, in total. There are six levels. Starting by the lowest level, okay, that would be A1. And we go up to A2, and then B1, B2, and then C1 and C2. So as I said before, A1 is the lowest level, is the basic level. And then C2 is the highest level you can get in any European language in this framework of reference. Now, but there are like three macro levels, if you want. The first one would be the basic user levels. That is the A's, A1 and A2. Basic user, and as the name says, it's, well, you can already communicate some simple situations, but it's still basic. Then we get up to the B's, B1 and B2, that would be independent user level. Okay, obviously you have a lot more independence, you can talk about many more topics and in many more situations, but still sort of intermediate. Then we go up to proficient user. There will be the C's, C1 and C2. C1 is called effective operational proficiency, which basically means that you already have a very good level of English or any language, and you can follow almost any type of conversation, read any type of text, etc. C2, which is the highest level, is mastery. It's called mastery, and obviously you have a very proficient level of the language, and you can communicate and you can express yourself with virtually no problem in any sort of situation that comes up. Okay, so now, but let's see all these six levels a little bit more in depth, okay? So, Anna, please, can you tell us about the A1 level? Can you tell us a little bit more in depth, please?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so at an A1 level, a person can understand and use familiar everyday expressions and very basic phrases aimed at the satisfaction of need type. And they can also introduce themselves and others and can ask and answer questions about personal details, such as where he or she lives, people he or she may know, and things he or she has. And they can also interact in a simple way, providing the other person talks slowly and clearly and is prepared to help them.
Okay, thank you very much, Anna. That would be the A1 level. Now, let me talk about the A2 levels, one higher upper. Okay, so an A2 user can understand sentences and frequently used expressions related to areas of most immediate relevance. For example, very basic personal and family information, shopping, local geography, employment. They can communicate in simple and routine tasks, requiring a simple and direct exchange of information on familiar and routine matters. They can also describe, in simple terms, aspects of his or her background, immediate environment, and matters in areas of immediate need. Okay, that'll be A2. Now, Mariluz, can you please tell us about B1, independent user, already?
Okay, a person who has a B1... can understand the main points of clear standard input on familiar matters regularly, encouraging work, school, leisure, and more. Also, they can also deal with most situations likely to arise whilst traveling in an area where the language is spoken. They can produce simple connected tests on topics which are familiar or of personal interest. and can describe experiences and events, dreams, hopes and ambitions, and briefly give reasons and explanations for opinions and plans.
Okay, I will go now to the B2 level. And let me just please comment something, because from this level up is where people should set the goals for. Mm-hmm. Okay? If you want to start speaking English properly, a B2 should be your minimum level. So please, if you're listening to us, set your goals high. Okay? Mm-hmm. And please try and reach from a B2 upwards, because that would give you, will start giving you good levels of English. Okay? So a B2 can understand the main ideas of a complex test on both concrete and abstract topics, including technical discussions in his or her field of specialization, can interact with a degree of fluency and spontaneity that makes regular interaction with native speakers quite without strain from the other party, can produce clear, detailed text on a wide range of subjects and explain a viewpoint on a topical issue, given the advantage and disadvantages of various options. So now we're talking a little bit of more serious English, but we cannot go to an even higher level. Okay, yes, let's go for C1.
We can get to the proficient user levels, okay? Starting by C1, Anna, please, go ahead.
So, at a C1 level, a person can understand a wide range of demanding, longer texts and recognize implicit meaning. They can also express themselves fluently and spontaneously without much obvious searching for expressions. They can also use language flexibly and effectively for social, academic and professional purposes. And also, they can produce clear, well-structured, detailed text on complex subjects, showing controlled use of organisational patterns, connectors and cohesive devices.
Thank you very much, Anna. So, on C1 level, we're talking about, you know, already a very good level of English, and it's an important level already. Let me finish with the C2 level, and as I said before, it's the highest, it's the top level that you can reach.
Which is, by the way, your level.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. A user of the C2 level can understand with ease virtually everything heard or read. They can summarize information from different spoken and written sources, reconstructing arguments and accounts in a coherent presentation. They can also express themselves spontaneously, very fluently and precisely, differentiating finer shades of meaning, even in more complex situations. So basically, in all types of contexts, even technical texts or speeches. It's a very good level of English, obviously, or any other language. Okay, now, so let me continue. So now, Christina is going to tell us about, okay, the different languages exams, okay, for German, for French.
Yes, I'm just going to talk about
just an outline.
Just an outline, because this obviously is an English program, but obviously there are many languages in the world, and many institutions that certify these levels. I will start with French, for example. Okay.
Oh la la.
Okay. I must say I don't speak French, but if I wanted to certify my level in the Common European Frame of Reference, the French have the ELF and DALF examinations, okay? And they have different exams. I am not going to read the exams because my French is absolutely terrible. Not to say about my German, which is absolutely zero, okay? But the Germans also have their exams, okay? And the tests are called DAF, and you can obtain them with the Goethe Institute, okay, and with others. And of course, they have their own exams. And They are called Goethe, and it's kind of, as I just said, I do not speak German, but it's a third Greek cat, so which means, I'm sorry for my pronunciation, but
very
I'm
well
not very good at German. And just an example, what about Spanish? Spain also has. Spain has. It's a very important language in the world, and it's becoming even more and more. And of course, we do have exams to certify Spanish for foreign speakers. These are called DELE, D-E-L-E, and they have them for all the levels, of course, from A1 to C2. And it's the Cervantes Institute who has the direction both academically, administrative, and economical. Okay, so those are just three examples. Of course, there's for Portuguese, there's for Japanese, there's for Chinese, there are for many. But as this is an English program, Manu, I think our audience is very interested in English.
Yeah, we will be talking now about the different exams in which you can certify your English level, because as everybody knows, it is a big issue nowadays, you know, to be able to prove that you have a certain level of English, and many people are worried about that, or many people are interested in that.
Yes, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Manu, mm-hmm. but also for our audience, because there are many institutions that certify these levels, we will be talking about some in this program, but we will continue in the next program.
Yep.
And also in the next programs, we will try to explain to you for what you need each level. Okay, if I want to go to university, if I'm a teacher,
exactly.
and all this, we will explain in the next mm-hmm. program, okay?
But because we don't have as much time as we would like to, today we're going to start, you know, talking about some of them. Okay, we will talk, all in all, about Trinity exams, Cambridge exams, TOEFL and TOEIC, and then the official School of Languages, that is, in Spanish, it's Escuela Oficial de Idiomas, as you know. But today, we're just going to start with Trinity College of London, okay? And now, my colleague and friend, Mariluz, is going to talk about that, okay? So, Mariluz, whenever you're ready, please.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Trinity exams. They have two kind of exams. The first one that I'm going to talk about is the GCSE, but I'm not going to focus on it so deeply because I think it's not as important as the second. In this exam, you are just test about spoken English, so you cannot certificate your writing and your reading skills. And in the second part, we have ISE, which tests reading and writing and speaking and listening. These exams can be taken together. I mean, they have two models, the reading and writing part and the listening and spoken part. But if you want to to get this certificate, you have to pass both, even though you do this separately. Well, in the reading and writing part, you have two reading tasks, one reading into writing, which means that you have to read a test and then write something about that, and a writing task, where you have to create an essay or a report, some test. Okay, and it lasts 2 hours. And in the speaking and listening part, there is a very curiosity to tell about it, that there is a part where you can prepare your own topic. I mean, you can go to this exam with a PDF and so your topic to the examiner, and then they will ask you some questions about your topic. And also you will be tested about your listening. You will have some listenings to listen, and then the examiner will ask you about this listening. It's a listening that you have to speak about it. You don't have to write about what you have listened. And they have levels available from A2 to C2. As we said before. And I think that's all that I have to say about Trinity.
So it's interesting. You can prepare your own speech.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
the speaking part.
At least you can prepare your topic and you will know all the vocabulary in relation with, which yeah. is which is better than when you go to an exam and you don't know about what they are going to ask you.
Yes, that's quite interesting. It's quite, I think that's something a bit different from other exams that that we know. And also, obviously this program is in Cuenca, yes, and people would like to know where they can prepare or where they can obviously sit these exams. Okay, to prepare any of these exams, obviously you would need the help of an academy. There are many academies in Cuenca. There are some which are examining centers, and as you know, because we all work in Foro is one of them that has currently Trinity exams. Okay, and that's a little bit about Trinity. And Manu, what's next?
Okay, so now we are going to interview Gloria Torres, okay, on behalf of the EOI, okay, that's Escuela Oficial de Idiomas.
Good morning, and today we have with us Gloria Torres. She is the headmistress and English teacher in EOI, that is Escuela Oficial de Idiomas here in Cuenca. So good morning, Gloria, and welcome to Radio Color.
Good morning, Cristina. It's a real pleasure being with you here today.
Okay, so we'd like to know a little bit of about EOI, the Escuela Oficial de Idiomas, and can you, because you know we've been talking about the different institutions that certify the different levels of languages within the Common European Frame of Reference. And of course we would like you, as a representative of the EOI, can you please explain the exams that you offer to certify these different European Frame of Reference levels?
Right. We offer A2, B1, B2 in English, French, German and Italian, and C1 in English, French and German. Mm-hmm. And these are the languages that we teach. We also teach at our school at the moment, both for official and independent students. In the case of English, that's what we're talking about today, we also offer distance learning from A2 to B2.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another option and another kind of modality. And I must say that we have quite a lot of students who decide to choose this way of learning instead of being official ones, since time is a big problem for them. And obviously, all the students, any type of modality they decide to take, they get the same certificate at the same time, at the same time and in the same day in the whole region of Castilla-La Mancha.
That's very good. A lot of people from villages use this type of modalities.
Yeah, that's right. And we are getting people from Tarancón has that English. That's a program for distance learning, but we are having regularly students from places like Huete and some other villages that come here once a week to have their kind of tutorial, and they prepare the rest of the classes at home on their own with the material they're provided with when they register for this type of learning.
Well, I think that's very interesting because Cuenca has a lot of villages around, and that, you know, and it's quite a big province, so I think that's quite a good alternative for these people, and especially because, as you said, we all have time management problems.
So that's the biggest problem.
Okay. Also, I think it would be interesting if you explain a little bit, because obviously you're within the Common European Frame of Reference, but maybe you can explain a little bit what each exam or what your exams, which skills your exams include.
Okay, we have five parts in the exam. There's a written part and an oral part, and they take part usually in two different days, right? And the written part has three parts at the same time: reading, listening and writing. And the spoken part or the oral part has what we call oral production and oral interaction. They're kind of a bit of similar to what the British Council proposes, and at the same time it's got its own peculiarities. So the reading is quite similar, as I said before. We have different tasks. We never know what we are really going to get, but it's multiple choice or true and false for the case of A2, remove paragraphs for B2 and for B1, and gap text. We usually get two tasks. For the listening, there's something which is quite interesting that has been going on for a couple of years or so, which is that the student has listened to the recordings three times, and one of those listenings is what I call for pleasure. It means that the student tries to understand as much as he or she can. And
sometimes she can't.
Sometimes, yeah, you're right, Christina. And there's no task in front of him or her. Okay.
So there's no paper in front of them. It's just they listen to it, so they get an idea of what it's about.
That's right. That's right. They can take notes if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And for the writing, there's only one task.
And then going back to the listening.
Yes.
And then they listen to it twice. But then they do have the paper
in front of them.
Where they fill in the whatever they have.
Yeah. There's always a blank space for note taking without a task in front of them.
Yes.
Okay? And for the writing, there's only one task. Okay? And, different layouts and different formats, but only one. And what is different...
Can I ask you a question about the writing?
Sure.
Because in other exams, probably they have two tasks, or three, or one, or whatever. Do they have a choice if it's a report, or if it's a letter, or is it set? Or does it depend on the level?
Absolutely. They always have two tasks, and they choose one. Okay, there's always a choice.
Okay.
Okay? And for the oral part, the oral production and the oral interaction, that's also slightly different. In the oral production, they are given two cards. They can read both of them, and they choose one of them. They have some minutes preparation time, and then they present their speech.
And the card would have a topic or some phrases?
Yes.
Or
it's got usually one question with some suggestions, usually four. They have to speak about two of them at least. And there are also some pictures that are used as prompts to help the student to get ideas and so on. And for the case of the oral interaction, that is an improvised conversation. And when I say improvised, it means that they only have 1 minute to read the card and to decide. This time, there's no choice. And, I was thinking about other times. Yeah, they are given two cards and they only have 1 minute to read and to decide which one they want to talk about. And they usually perform it in pairs or trios if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's a situation with some suggestions that they have to cover, they have to speak about. So basically, I think that is a bit different from other kind of institutions.
Yeah, because they're not asked questions.
No. I mean, the tribunal is just there recording, taking notes, and then assessing.
Okay. It's quite different, yes,
from
other institutions.
I think that this part cannot be that trained as you would train for other type of exams. You know what I mean? So this is pretty unexpected. I mean, of course, you know the topics of the frame of the European frame
of reference.
And
it's quite a long name.
I mean, sometimes you shorten it. But it's true. So you can predict what topic, but not the direction of the topic
that
it is going to be presented and the student will have to deal with.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
That's quite good. So that's a little bit about the different skills, which are similar in all exams, but each exam has its peculiarities, and Gloria has just explained how the ones in the Scuola di Idiomas work. But the question that everybody always asks is, do these certificates expire?
No, of course they don't. I think it's the same case as some other institutions. But once you got your certificate at a school of languages in any part of the country, it will be for the rest of your life.
Okay. And, Gloria, who accepts the Escuela de Oficial de Idiomas certificates nowadays?
Well, I know there's quite a lot of controversy, and there are so many doubts about this fact. Unfortunately, our certificate for the moment is only accepted in our country by official institutions, and this is something we're working on at present, urging the educational authorities to make our certificate recognized in the whole of Europe in the same way as we accept certificates from the British Council, Trinity University, Goethe Institute, sorry, in the case of German, or Delft, in the case of French. So we are working on that, and I think that it would be very interesting that they were accepted and valid for, because we are a public school, and the fundings are from all the Spaniards. And it should be more useful than it is, in fact.
I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And who accepts? Where can I take?
That's why.
Sorry. Where can I take these exams?
Well, these exams can be taken at any official language school if we are talking about the whole of Spain. And if we refer to our region, Castilla-La Mancha, there are 13 official languages schools plus 3 what are called extensiones or extensions of the schools,
mm-hmm.
where people, anybody, even from other communities, we are getting quite a lot of people from Valencia, we are getting quite a lot of people from Madrid, because our fees are much more cheap than the fees that they pay in those communities,
mm-hmm.
and you can take two exams, one in June and another one in September, whereas in these cities or these provinces, there's only one possibility in June.
Yes, basically because they're larger cities and it's more complicated.
That's why. It's really difficult articulating this kind of the examining process in June, because we are the same teachers as we are at the beginning of the course. So
you must be very busy.
Very indeed, very.
Okay, and
so
if you had to say something about why
the School of Languages, why studying here, why getting your certificate here, very interesting question. I think there are many reasons to come to the School of Languages or the Escuela Oficial de Idiomas. But I'll focus on four, right?
Okay.
So the first one is that we are the most competitive ones in terms of price. We offer 4 hours a week, plus reinforcement classes, plus personal tutorials for 84 and 76 euros a year if you're a new student, and 61 and 33 euros if you have already been a student at any time in any official school of languages in the country. There are special prices for what we call in Spain familias numerosas, and even when they are they have a lot of members, they are free of charge in the same way as disabled students,
mm-hmm.
and terrorism victims. They don't pay any fees with us. So I think that, let's don't forget, we cannot forget that we are state school.
Yes.
Okay, so that's one of the main reasons to come to study and to get your certificate with us. The second one is our qualified teachers. We all have a degree and we all pass through a competitive exam process in order to become part of the schools. And also we count with the conversation assistants from different parts of the world, native speakers of the languages we teach. So I think that we complement quite well each other. And thirdly, our certificate. I think this is interesting for our listeners to know. is the only one which is valid for teachers who want to change their posting, what we call in Spanish, concurso de traslados, and for graduates in teaching who want to pass their competitive exams. Once you have passed your competitive exam, you can access to the bilingual programs with other certificates from other institutions. But if you are considering the possibility of changing your post, you can use the School of Language, this certificate, in order to get more credits for it. And the last one is that we also offer other variety of courses, what it could be considered special purposes courses that we call cursos monográficos. Mm-hmm. At the moment, we're just running specific courses for teachers in the different levels of the frame. But in the past, we have also had special courses for sanitary personnel. Mm-hmm. And we also offered courses for restaurant and tourism, you know, well, yes. I wouldn't say restaurants, I think that it's very...
Hospitality.
Yeah, that's right.
Business.
And it would be very interesting, you know, for a city as Cuenca.
Yes.
Having a good range of people working in this sector and being able...
Yes, I know some... we are also working on these subjects, and specifically in some of those subjects... that you have mentioned. Mm-hmm. So, Gloria, it's been really interesting. I think it's nice, very nice to have you here with us. We are all teachers, and we all want every single Cunquense to speak excellent languages. In this case, this is an English program, so yep. We are really pushing English. And this is just a little bit to bring you English closer to you. So thank you, Gloria, very much.
Thanks to you, Christina.
And I don't know if there's anything else you would like to add.
I do agree completely with you when you speak about people here in our city being able to speak a foreign language, and especially English. And I think that it would be very important for the developing of our city, of our province, that people... I always dream with people having a B1. I mean, I consider, and I think about people in Cuenca having the most of them being B1 speakers. I'm not really worried about them being B2. You know,
yes.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
Because I think that nearly everybody could manage in any kind of situation.
Yes. Well, as I said before, previously in the program, if you're studying a language, and I was talking basically about English at that moment, but I said, if you want to speak a language, to start speaking seriously, you have to start thinking you'll have to be minimum a B2.
You're right.
Because that's where you really start speaking a language.
You're right.
And your objectives should be C1.
Of course.
Of course. But minimum, I think, we should aspire to
probably,
a B2.
Probably. I was also thinking about our minority languages that we also teach and we also certificate in this school.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes whenever you think about students taking or doing, for example, German, right, it is for me much more important having a wide range of students being B1 in a minority language like German than having two or three being B2
yes.
speakers, you know what
yeah,
I mean? So
yes, I do, and I think people nowadays are also considering not only learning a second language, but also learning a third language.
Which is also compulsory. It's kind of compulsory nowadays. English is not enough, isn't it?
Yes.
So it is.
So anyway, we'll keep working hard from all our institutions to get you all speaking English. So, Gloria, it's been a pleasure to have you here today.
It's been my pleasure,
okay.
Christina. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, so, well, I guess this is the end of today's program, okay, on What's the Fact. Very many thanks, everybody, you know, for making this possible. And let's say goodbye to Agus on the decks.
Bye-bye. See you next week.
Okay, thank you, Agus. Bye-bye, Anna.
Bye. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Christina, see you soon.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Mariluz.
Okay, see you next week.
Okay, and of course, I cannot forget about our other helpers, we can say. That would be Beatriz, and that would be Brenda as well. Okay? And speaking on the phone right now, I hope to see you next week, okay? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Radio Color, la radio libre de Cuenca.